Loop Collective is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, The Woj Pod. Get the inside scoop on all the biggest NBA news as the biggest names in the game join ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, featuring in-depth conversations, breaking news reaction and analysis, and coverage of the biggest events on the NBA calendar. Be sure to check it out. Follow The Woj Pod as well as The Hoop Collective wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday evening after this Wizards-Pacers game, which we're going to start this before the end of that game because I think the Pacers started their offseason about halftime. So the play-in tournament is mostly over. We're five out of six games in. The Wizards win in advance. I'll spend a minute talking about that, but first let me bring in my guests. You don't really need to introduce them on our Thursday record for Friday Post. But out of respect to Band McMahon joining us from Dallas, Texas.
Howdy, partners.
Joining us from Boston, Massachusetts. I think you're still in Boston. I didn't ask you, Tim Bontemps, whether you're still there.
I am still in Boston. And a quick shout out to Mike Breen and Mike Wobon, who I drove down to Connecticut to write about getting in the Hall of Fame last weekend after the pod. So shout out to them.
I'm not familiar with those two guys. Are they young up-and-comers that we should have on our radar?
People you should have on your radar, I would say.
Okay. So I will say,
hey, fellas,
this.
Fellas, I do need to warn you. I'm seeing three microphones. I'm just going to talk in the middle and hope for the best.
You had a few drinks, have you? I wanted to call a foul on that, him saying that, but it did look in the post-game interview like his left eye was like a little off.
He got hit in the eye, and he, you know, look, LeBron is one of the all-time greats at producing drama and playing basketball. Both of those things are true.
Yeah, I mean, first off, it was an incredible shot. I know it's a whole game. We're talking about LeBron's three with a minute left in the Lakers play-in win over the Warriors. I feel bad for the Warriors because they played really good defense on that possession, and they got a sort of a dream shot, which is LeBron taking a 33-footer.
You feel bad for the Warriors. Feel bad for the Suns. They're the ones who got to see LeBron, AD, and the defending champs in the first round.
And the Warriors. What the Warriors should be feeling bad about is the third quarter of that game, because the Warriors controlled that game. They should have won that game, and they literally threw the ball and the game away in the third quarter repeatedly. And they put themselves in a position where they gave LeBron a chance to win the game. And like McMahon said, LeBron has a flair for the dramatic, and he has a very established flair for winning games, and he did both in once with that shot.
You got to love how he hits the three, which is definitely the biggest shot of the Lakers season to this point. In his career, it's not really that – doesn't rank really that high. But, you know, in the moment it was pretty big. But he's pointing to his face immediately afterwards.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe
I can't see. I can't see.
But his left eye did look a little off in the interview. But it wasn't red, but it was just a little closed.
What is the what when you think of LeBron big shots? What stands out? Because to me, the definitive LeBron playoff moment is the chase down block on Iguodala. Yeah.
Yes.
But where do you start on your you've seen them all? Where do you start on your LeBron big shots list?
Well, he's hit three or four buzzer beaters in the playoffs, and where the ball actually goes in at the horn. The most famous one was during the Eastern Conference Finals, now 12 years ago,
2009.
Yeah, to beat the Magic, although they lost the series. And a couple years ago, he hit two game winners. One of the most spectacular plays I've ever seen him make was to beat the Raptors in the second round of the East playoffs
the last game for DeMar DeRozan and Dwayne Casey. They, you know, made their major moves after that, but he goes coast to coast and throws in like a pretty athletic off balance. I think he banked it in.
Yeah, I think you're right. Over OG Anunoby.
You know, it was the Raptors made a couple of mistakes on the play, letting him get to that. But it was an incredible shot. Then, of course, there's the shot against Chicago, which you just had the anniversary of. He hits the Bulls were ahead 2-1, and I believe ahead. I think the game was tied. I think it was tied, and he hits the shot in the corner. To win that game, make it 2-2. Then they win the next two games.
And in that one where after the game, he basically said, yeah, we had a play drawn up. And I said, we ain't running
that.
I'm not walking down memory lane on a Thursday night here, but that was one of the most amazing games I ever covered. The Cavs, I apologize if you guys are yelling at the podcast because I thought that the Cavs were tied, but maybe they were down. I think maybe they had to be down. They had to be down one.
I think they were down one. I'm double checking right now while you're talking.
Okay. So they inbound the ball and David Blatt tries to call timeout that he doesn't have. And Ty Lue grabs him from behind. This is in the last 10 seconds of the game. Ty Lue, his assistant at the time, grabs him from behind, but he's clearly said timeout. And, you know, I've looked at the replay a lot of times. I've written several books about that Cavs team. And he tries to call. I'm pretty sure the referee, who is Scott Foster, sees him and basically gives him a subtle shake of the head, like, you don't have one.
the game was tied, by okay. the way. Hit a shot over Jimmy at the buzzer.
Okay. So if he calls that right there, it's a technical foul on the Cavs, and the Bulls shoot a technical free throw to take the lead. Could have been one of the biggest disasters of all time. The next day, when confronted about that, David Blatt says, well, they say that the people who make the most decisions per minute in professions is after surgeons and fighter pilots is basketball coaches. He basically said, well, when you have to operate like a fighter pilot or a surgeon.
I remember that.
Which
is one of many, many memorable David Blatt quotes. Yeah. But let's not start talking about.
Anyway, right after that, they do call a timeout. Blatt calls a play for Kyrie, and LeBron says, no, we're not running that play. Hits that one for three that wins that game, totally changes the series and propels them to the finals. He had a buzzer beater to beat the Pacers in the playoffs. But I would argue that right up there in the top one or five or whatever you want to do, game seven against the San Antonio Spurs to win his second championship, maybe 15 seconds left, 10 seconds left in the fourth quarter, Heat are up by two. He hits about a 20 footer over defense, with 1 second on the shot clock to clinch the game, clinch the title. That's right up there too, even though it wasn't at the buzzer. He's had a bunch of other shots too. But the point is he, you know, in that moment, he points to his eye because I do think that he knows that it makes it more grandiose and will be remembered for the
you
shot.
Think? Yeah. You think?
One thing I'll say about the play-in tournament so far, had a couple of blowouts, yes. Had a couple of good games. The home teams, I believe, are 5-0. And, you know, I guess the Grizzlies could do anything in Golden State Friday night, but I would favor the Warriors mm-hmm. to win that game. And I don't know what that says. I don't know how that'll speak to the future, but it is instructive. And, you know, the values of the seeds within the game seems to be pretty important just in this small sample size.
Yeah. It's a reminder that for all of the, you know, for all the people that were upset about the potential ramifications for teams that finished seventh and eighth in the regular season and maybe missed the playoffs, it is pretty heavily slanted in their favor. You know, they have to win one or two games. And in the case of the seventh seed, you have to win one or two home games. In the case of the eighth seed, you get a guaranteed home game. So, you know, it certainly has worked out that way. And if Golden State wins tomorrow, it'll, you know, only reinforce that even further.
Boy, you think some folks in the league office might be tuned into that game and maybe waving some blue and gold pom-poms? I mean, I hope I don't get a $25,000 fine for pointing out the obvious that the league office wants the Warriors in the playoffs.
But, I mean, he's referring to Nate McMillan getting fined $25,000 for – what was the exact quote? He said –
I didn't see why he got fined, actually. This is news to me. I was going to look it up. I was confused by the fine. I was wondering where it came from.
The thing is, he got fined, and then I went and you know, saw what he said, because the league's office, since the sensitivity from the league office is the only reason that anybody probably outside of Atlanta even saw this. So he got fined. He's pointing out the obvious, right? That he's saying.
Let me read the exact. I don't have the exact quote, but I'm going to read the reason for the fine.
I do have. Okay, read the reason, then I'll get to the quotes.
He has been fined $25,000 for detrimental public comments asserting bias by the NBA.
Yeah, and his detrimental public comments, I would put under the no spit Sherlock, or I guess it's no spit Spurlock category. Talking about basically. Absolutely. I've talked to the team a lot. Basically, I've gone as far as saying the league wants this. They need this. New York, this is a big market for the league. New York has been out of the playoffs for a number of years, and this is a team that our league, they want to see. There's a huge fan base, and they want to see New York in the playoffs. It went on for a while.
Well, yeah.
And the one thing that he did say was there's going to be a lot of calls that probably won't go our way, which is...
Yes, that's why they fined him. I mean, this is ridiculous anyway. I certainly agree. But I was just looking through the quotes, and I saw there's going to be a lot of calls that probably won't go our way. And I was like, well, there's where they could throw the yellow flag and give them a fine. But it's still insane. Like, no one would have noticed this, to your point, Tim, if he hadn't gotten fined for it.
Right.
I certainly didn't know about it, you know, so.
But I will say that I do think that particular series – is going to be there. I wouldn't say, how do I want to say, the officiating is going to have an extra important factor in that series because of the way that the Hawks and particularly Trae Young plays.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we even talked about this, I think, last week on the podcast. Yes. You know, Trae Young is a guy that a lot of people around the league have been really curious to see how he'll look in the playoffs because he does do a lot of foul hunting. And gets to the foul line a ton, uses a lot of tricks, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see how that goes in a playoff setting when the whistles are going to be tighter and there's teams are going to be more physical and he's not a big guy. It's one of the reasons why I'm really interested to watch that series.
Yeah, and I just think it could be one of these situations where the coaches start, you know, working the referees through the media, which we've seen lots of times.
Right.
And maybe they also just want to set the tone. Don't do that. You know?
Sure.
But
I remember going way back, speaking of going down memory lane, I remember in game two of the 2011 first round when Nate McMillan was the Blazers coach, he was so pissed that I wrote a huge story about Danny Crawford officiating a Mavericks playoff game. That's when I had all the ESPN stats and information stuff I've been sitting on for a year. The Mavs were like 1-17 in their previous 18 playoff games, both straight up and against the spread with Danny Crawford officiating. All these, like, just all this ammo. And he was
that was dating back to the 2006 playoffs, which
even before, was still I think it was dating back to like Mavs Kings.
Okay.
But yeah, and McMillan was not pleased that was a big headline on ESPN and was getting a lot of attention. He's like,
well, and
now if there's a 50-50 call, which way do you think it's going now?
Well, and to your point, right, Tim, Nate McMillan's a guy who's been around for decades in the playoffs and knows how the game is played and is playing the game. You know, that's how this goes.
Well, I saw that Wednesday, Lakers, Warriors, that the stats about the John Goble, Josh Tiven those are the referees that had the game. John Goble, Josh Tiven, and Trey Maddox. And the Warriors had lost 14 of their previous 15 games when they were officiated by either Goble or Maddox. Now, that is one of the more circumstantial stats that you'll run into.
Because well, also, how many of those were last season when the Warriors lost 14 of every 15 games, period?
Right. But, like, it's just, you know, but it was just interesting that, you know, if you are looking for a reason about why you're getting screwed,
you can always find one.
That's right.
And teams always do.
Some are more glaring than others, I will say.
That's also true.
Yeah. I mean, the 2006 finals were not the finest moment for officiating. But Dwayne
neither
was
getting... neither was Kings Lakers back in the day. Neither frankly was a lot of that Laker Warrior game. I mean, there was a lot of moments down the stretch. I mean, LeBron committed two or three fouls in the fourth quarter of that game. Anthony Davis at one point threw, I think, Draymond Green aside to get a rebound. I mean, there was some iffy calls down the stretch of that game too. But again, I'm not really going to hear any complaints from the Warriors about it because they had that game in their hands in the third quarter. And, you know, we've seen Steph is an unbelievable player, but we've seen in the past, he can be pretty loose with the ball. And the rest of the Warriors were also very loose with the ball. And they let the Lakers get back in that game and they gave LeBron a chance and LeBron took it.
Okay. So the Lakers win. I don't have the odds up to this moment because I know they're always changing, and I know with all the Lakers, you know, the betting lines are hard to square because they're penalizing the Laker fans who are going to bet on their team, so many of them. But the opening odds opened at the Suns being, you know, the Lakers are minus 300, bet 300 to win $100.
Well, you've pointed out the Lakers' odds are always going to be skewed a little bit.
I know,
because there's so much money coming in. But
even accounting for that.
Okay, Bontemps, who are you picking in that series?
I'm honestly not sure.
Well, I'm picking the Lakers. Wendy, you don't have the balls to make picks, so you're exempt from that conversation.
Some people see it differently.
But look, it's not disrespectful to say, hey, you're the underdog against LeBron James,
right?
Anthony Davis, and the defending champions.
That's right.
And
defending,
like, this
champions
is
with arguably the best player of all time on their team. They're going to get the benefit of the doubt.
The circumstances behind the Lakers being a 7 seed are unique and understood, right? Again, and look, credit to the Suns. They've had a great season, but you're talking about a team that's got three starters that are going to be playing in the first NBA playoff game of their lives, and going in the season, like, it wouldn't be surprising if you said Suns Lakers in the first round, you would have just thought the Suns squeaked in as a 7 or 8 seed.
Right. You would have expected the Suns to have won a play-in
tournament
game.
Did the Lakers impress you?
Playing.
I mean, they've won 6 games in a row, but are they impressing you right now?
Well, that was what I was going to say. I mean, look, I want to say the Lakers are going to win that series for all the reasons Tim just said, right? They have LeBron James, they have Anthony Davis, they're defending champions. They've been in these playoff kind of situations before where basically nobody on the Suns has. That being said, you watch that game last night and the Lakers did not look good. And LeBron was not moving well throughout a lot of that game. Anthony Davis did not look very good throughout a lot of that game. Dennis Schroeder looked terrible for the entire game, got benched multiple times in that game for Alex Caruso, who saved
and Andre
the Lakers
Drummond's
in that
is
game.
Not very good.
Well, Andre Drummond stinks. He doesn't stink.
He just is not a star.
Andre Drummond is not a guy you want to be playing in high leverage playoff games. You saw that in that game last night. He is not going to win playoff games.
Let me rephrase that for you to do you a favor. Andre Drummond is not a guy you want to count on. You want to have to count on.
I don't want him on the floor. I don't want him on the floor. Games.
I don't want a center on the floor in the playoffs who can't guard anybody in a pick and roll. And he got obliterated.
If I can play Anthony Davis at center. Like, if the Lakers,
right,
every minute they play Andre Drummond, they're doing their opponent a favor in the playoffs.
They'll have him out there for stretches here and there against teams. You know, if they're playing, you know, he can maybe lean on DeAndre Ayton for a bit and be out there. But if you're playing him 25, 30 minutes and he's playing like a real part of your rotation.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to 30 minutes.
Well, listen, yeah. when he was on the court last night in Wednesday in that game, it was a disaster for the Lakers. And things changed when he wasn't on the court. Like, and that's been the case all season when they've played good teams. The center they should play against good teams is Marc Gasol. They should not play Andre Drummond. They should not play Montrezl Harrell. We saw what happens to Montrezl Harrell against good teams in the playoffs last year. Like, this has been the thing we've talked about all year with them. They should play Marc Gasol for whenever they need somebody who isn't Anthony Davis at center, and then they should play Anthony Davis. But all that being said, that set that aside. The whole question about this series is going to come down to how healthy is LeBron and how can he play? Because you watched that game last night, and he turned it up down the stretch, and he made the plays to get them over the finish line like he has so many times. And if you put it to me, I'm going to assume he's going to do that again against the Suns, for all, especially given the lack of experience overall on the other side. But if LeBron isn't 100% and he isn't better than he was for most of that game last night, Phoenix is a lot better than a Golden State team with literally one guy who can dribble and score in Steph Curry. And I think the margin for error is going to be a lot smaller. And like we've talked about, the Warriors threw that game away. We could very easily be talking about the Lakers having a one-game winner-take-all game with Memphis tomorrow. And instead, they escape and get a few days off, which they really need, because LeBron just, you know, did not physically look like the guy we're used to seeing.
Well, the Lakers shot 40% as a team yesterday, 32% on threes, which is not going to get it done a lot.
And it's been a season-long problem, right?
But they're the best defensive team in the league, too. So that's
yes, they are. They won that game, and they won that game on defense.
20 turnovers the Warriors had, and it felt like more.
Yep. But again, the Warriors have one guy, and look, and Steph is incredible, and he was hitting some insane shots himself last night. But they have one guy who can do stuff with the ball, right? That is certainly not the case with Phoenix. Phoenix can score and play, and they're really good. So, like, I understand why people think the Lakers are going to win. Like I said, I think ultimately the Lakers will win, but they've got to be better than they were in that game against the Warriors, because Phoenix is a much better team and will be able to take a lot more advantage of their inefficiencies on offense and some of the other mistakes that the Lakers made if they're not playing at a much higher level.
This isn't the most important series of Chris Paul's career. Obviously that conference final series that, you know, they were winning and he got hurt in was probably the most important series of his career. That's when he was in Houston.
Mm-hmm. It might be, though.
It's a pretty big one, man. It's the first time he's ever played LeBron.
Right. In some ways, you could argue it is the most important, too.
Well, it's the most important because it's like every playoff series he plays in from now on is the most important because he doesn't have that, you know.
Well,
look, he's already proven that those of us who thought he was on the decline a couple years ago were dead-ass wrong. But, you know, he's 36 years old as a – you know, 6'1" dude, like, he doesn't have that much time left. So he's got an opportunity here. And, you know, so far, for various reasons, many injury related, whether it was himself or Blake Griffin or whatever, hasn't been able to take advantage of him.
Well, he had that, you know, he's had bad luck.
He
broke his hand that one time, had the hamstring.
No, for sure.
Yeah, Blake broke his foot. He had the hamstring.
Yep. And look at this from the other side too, right? If the Suns can win this series, obviously a huge if, but if they can win this series, the path is open for them. Like, they're going to be heavy favorites in the second round against either Denver or Portland to get to the conference finals. And if they've already beat the Lakers.
Yeah, the Clippers made sure they wouldn't be in the way.
That's right.
That's why I don't understand the Clippers.
Well, and if they've already beat the
Clippers announced to the world, we are so terrified of the Lakers.
Yep.
Well, we were absolutely chicken.
That's right. And if the Suns have already beat the Lakers, there's not anybody else in the conference you're going to look at and say, well, they can't beat them, because, you know, you're going to say, well, if they beat the Lakers, they could beat anybody else. So this if they can win this series, the path is truly open for Chris Paul to get to the NBA Finals in what is 16th NBA season for the first time, which would be a really unbelievable story.
Yeah, and so, I feel like Chris Paul, look, it's not like his reputation is tarnished because he hasn't been to the finals, right? Like, nobody looks at Chris, and really there's only one series where you can say, man, boy, he choked there. And that was that OKC series. But, I mean, the guy, career playoff numbers, 21 points, 8 assists, good efficiency, whatever. No, I don't think anybody looks at him and says he's a choker. It's just he's one of those guys who's on the an all-time great who has that one huge omission missing from his legendary resume.
I mean, you'd have to go back.
He's where Dirk was the year that Dirk, you know, finally carried the Mavericks to the title. And then at that point, it's basically like you can't say anything else.
Well, you'd have to go back and look. He's easily in the conversation for the best player to never play in the NBA Finals. And like that's the kind of thing where like if he can break through this year with the Suns and get in there, like that, it just like you said, it's not that he's obviously a first ballot Hall of Famer and an all time great player, but it would give him an opportunity to raise himself up another level beyond where he is now if he can get them there. And you know, on top of everything else he's done the past couple of years, it would be a truly incredible story if he could pull it off. But yeah, I mean, this is, you know, it's a huge series on so many levels. It's going to be really fascinating.
You hear a lot of people say, well, you know, the Suns don't have a lot of experience. And you know, so you may say, well, what does that matter? What does that mean? And look, I don't know how the series is going to go. I'm the guy who doesn't make predictions because I admit I don't know what's going to happen most of the time. But in a series like this where two teams are pretty closely matched, you typically will see games where one team just plays better, shoots the ball better, the other team is off. I don't know how many there will be. Maybe there will be three like that. We've seen some series where there's been six games that have been one-sided, where one team is clearly better than the other. And then you have these 50-50 games. Maybe there's one in the series, maybe there's four in the series, where that's where that sort of stuff shows up. And so the question really is if there's two or three 50-50 games in this series, games that could go either way, and one side has guys who've never done it before and the other side has LeBron James, you're going to favor LeBron James. And that's why, you know, it's not being flippant to say that the Suns are not favored. It's just looking at that situation and saying this is a guy who figures out how to win games. I remember so many times there would be games. I mean, I'm just talking about regular season games, Wednesdays in February. You know, just some Cavs-Bucks game, some Cavs-Wizards game. And the games could go either way. It's a tie game midway through the fourth quarter. And LeBron carries his team home. And, you know, it gets ultimately forgotten because it's a regular season game. But he's literally done it hundreds of times in his career. And doing that in the playoff level is just – it's a big ask. It's a big lift.
Well, and AD, look, he wasn't able to carry the Pelicans to playoff success. But if you look at AD's numbers in the playoffs, they're pretty ridiculous. And last year, obviously, you know, he proved he could be a starring player on a championship team.
Well, and just look at the Warriors game, right? Like, again, for all the things that Golden State did wrong in that game to let the game get away, they let the Lakers into it and gave them a chance, and LeBron took it. And, you know, like you said, Brian, when you're in the playoffs and you've been in the playoffs a bunch of times, there's a reason why inexperienced teams don't win in the playoffs. Like you tend to have to go through it and go through some pain on the way up. And it's because you have to learn how to win in those moments. And, you know, the Suns are going to get every bit of it that they could hope to learn all at once, having to go up against the Lakers in the first round. It's a bummer in some respects because they've had an incredible season. And, you know, like Tim said, it's not exactly a fair reward for the year they've had, but ultimately, like, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how they raise up to the challenge.
I will say, and nobody in Salt Lake City will agree with this, but I was kind of rooting for the Warriors last night just because I wanted to see Steph versus CP3 in the playoffs one more time.
Well, it also would have been unbelievable if you had Lakers Jazz in the playoffs, particularly after the All-Star game stuff with the Jazz and LeBron. Sure. I mean, that would have been
look, we might still
incredible.
Get it. Might still
oh,
get
no,
it
for,
the
oh,
West
for
Finals.
Sure. I just mean in the first round. That would have been absolutely unbelievable if that happened. But
and
yeah,
by the
no,
way,
look,
what a treat that would be. Best record in the league. Here's the defending champs in the first round. Not that, look, the Warriors have been, they won like 15 of the last 20 regular season games. Their point differential has been elite during that stretch. I mean, the Weissman's gone stretch.
If they can beat Memphis, they're going to be a tough matchup for the Jazz. Well, Jazz, I think, will win the series, but they're going to be
don't disrespect be the Grizzlies, there, McMahon.
I'm not disrespecting the Grizzlies.
We both said if. Yeah. We both said if.
Okay, so McMahon.
Look forward to seeing who's reffing that game, though.
Well, I'm sure the stats will be available.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
McMahon, which one of these first-round series are you paying particular attention to?
Honestly, I'm fascinated by what we were just talking about. You know, with all due respect thing again. With all due respect, Warriors versus Jazz. Warriors still have to earn their way there. But sizzling Steph Curry, the championship credentials of Steph and Draymond, the Warriors playing at the level they've played at.
Warriors are playing really good defense. Really, really good defense.
Really good.
They've been top five all year.
Yeah, they've been a great defensive team all year. You know, Draymond will kind of invent the chip of, oh, Gobert is going to be defensive player of the year again. You know, I'm the best defensive player in the world. Da, da, da. I think that, honestly, that Gobert-Draymond matchup to me is fascinating. I would assume that Draymond would play a lot of that series at center just because even though he's not a shooter, if Gobert's defending Draymond and he doesn't come out away from the hoop, you're basically – inviting Draymond just to screen Steph into wide open threes over and over and over again. So he would drag Rudy out there.
And by the way, real quick on Draymond, if there was anybody who was wondering if Draymond Green could still be an elite impact player, especially on defense, if you just watch the game, just watch the Lakers game. Well, he was unbelievable defensively in that Lakers game.
No, he's a very deserving defense player of the year finalist without question. And I don't give a crap how many points he scores. He is an impactful offensive player. I love watching the Draymond Steph two-man. I love when Draymond catches the ball 25 feet from the hoop. Nobody cares if he's shooting it. He doesn't even look at the rim. First thing he's doing is seeing where Steph is, kind of scanning the floor and figuring out how am I going to get this guy an open look. And then Steph is so good, not just moving into threes, but boom, backdoor. You're dying to make sure he doesn't get anything out there. Boom, backdoor cut.
It's like a quarterback and receiver who've played 10 years together because they're not calling plays. And sometimes you wonder, well, how does Draymond know that Steph, because Steph just, you know, has 15 different ways to get around a guy.
Yeah.
And sometimes you wonder, like, how does Draymond know which one he's going to use? Because
he's seen everyone 10,000 times.
You talk about two dudes who communicate just off feel and you know, eye contact and whatever. And Draymond is, for a non-scorer, he is an absolute joy to watch offensively because he is such a dominant passer and screener and playing with. Like, it is a perfect fit him playing with Steph, who's the perfect, you know, like the best guy in the world at taking advantage of Draymond's unique skill set.
Well, and the reason I thought that was especially noteworthy in that Lakers game was I was sitting there watching that Lakers game and watching Kent Bazemore do a lot of terrible things in the game thinking next year with Klay Thompson back, not expecting Klay Thompson to be an all-NBA caliber player again coming off these injuries. But if he can just be a starting caliber wing player who is going to be obviously an elite shooter, because that's not going to go away. Like, you plug him in there in place of Kent Bazemore, that team jumps up a bunch. And that's before they potentially add anything else.
Right. The other thing they've done is they've cut the rotation down to 8 guys, in part because of a couple injuries that, frankly, have probably helped their cause.
Yep.
You know, the other thing in that series that is going to be obviously critical is it's not like Donovan Mitchell gets to ease his way back from 6 weeks out, you know, 5-6 weeks out due to the sprained ankle. He practiced today, Thursday, for the first time since April 16th. So, you know, he missed the last 16 games of the regular season, you know, especially against an elite defensive team. They are going to need Donovan's ability to create off the dribble. They don't want to have to rely on it, but more and more in the playoffs, you know, that becomes the most important facet of their offense. So both Donovan and, you know, Conley played a couple games late in the season, but he missed a pretty significant stretch there too with a hamstring. So they're two guys that are, you know, off dribble creators are chipping off rust as the playoffs roll around.
And ultimately, though, you saw in that Lakers Warriors game. I know the Lakers have a great defense. The Warriors are so limited on offense outside of Steph that while I think he and Draymond can make it interesting, Utah, I think, is just way too good on offense, and it's just gonna they're not gonna be able to keep up over a 7-game series. So I think Utah's gonna win that series pretty comfortably, but it will be fun to watch that Gobert Draymond battle, and it will be fun to see how you know, Steph tries to get going against get going against Utah, and trying to make it as interesting as possible.
You know what's crazy about Draymond? So you remember, obviously, we all remember the 2016 Finals. He gets suspended after hitting LeBron in Game 4 in Cleveland.
Yep.
Gets suspended for Game 5. He had a 32-point game in Game 7. He had an incredible first half. I think he hit 4 or 5 threes in the first half of Game 7.
Yeah.
Was potentially going to be an all-time, you know, taking off the goat horns game. I don't think he's had a 30-point game since. Not that he ever had a lot of 30-point games, but, I mean, the reminder was is that occasionally he was pretty potent offensively.
He had that one outlier year as a three-point shooter. Strangely, he's like, his ability to finish has just gone kaput, but he's still a damn good rim protector. So I
would argue that he's better than he was back then. And I remember
on the defensive end.
Yeah. And just overall, I mean, just he's just as much,
he's not better because the offense is just not existent from a scoring standpoint. I mean, For as good as he is at everything else, like that season, he was shooting, like to your point, he was shooting 37-38% from three.
That's true.
On top of it.
Yeah.
But listen, my point before was Golden State's had a nice year this year, but I thought it was really important to see Draymond in a game like that play at that kind of level, because it shows me that if they can add Clay and maybe another piece this offseason, like they have a chance to be a factor in the West beyond just a, you know, run of the mill, trying to get in the playoffs team.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Bontemps, what series are you paying attention to?
I mean, we talked there's two in the East that I think are particularly noteworthy. We talked a little bit earlier, but I think Hawks-Knicks is going to be really interesting. The Knicks back in the playoffs obviously is a fun story. And, you know, again, I'm just really curious to see what Trae Young looks like in a postseason series, especially against a really good physical defensive team like the Knicks. But if you're talking about Eastern Conference playoff series, the one that obviously stands out is Bucks Heat. Rematch of last year's Eastern Conference semifinals, a series that Milwaukee, frankly, could have gotten away from if they had not played their guys in Miami on Saturday night. Still had a chance at the 2-seed, but a very slim chance given that the Brooklyn Nets were playing the tanking Cleveland Cavaliers in their final game of the season. But the Bucks played it out, and they pounded the Heat and won the game. And I like that approach from this Milwaukee team. I know it makes their road a little tougher. They obviously now would have to, in theory, go through Miami, Brooklyn, and Philly to get to the finals. But for a team that needs to exercise playoff demons and needs to kind of have a fresh start, I like the fact that they didn't run away from that and just said, hey, we're just going to play and let the chips fall and not worry about who our opponents are. And I'm really curious to see with Jrue Holiday, with PJ Tucker, you know, with some of the changes they made during the season to try to implement more of a switching defense, to have some more versatility when they get into the playoffs. It's going to be really, really interesting right off the bat to see if that stuff translate into success against a, you know, a tough veteran Miami Heat team with arguably the best coach in the league in Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and a bunch of guys that are going to walk into that series thinking they can win it.
I saw Giannis today said somebody asked him, will this year be different than the last year?
That was me, actually.
Oh, how about that? What did he say, Bonteps?
He said, I can't tell you, Tim. It might not be different. That was what he said, which I thought was a pretty honest response.
And what did you take away from him saying that? Taking pressure off? Or
I thought it was very interesting watching Giannis today because he just seemed incredibly relaxed. And the question I asked him, after saying that, he went on to say the thing he's learned from the last 2 years is to not get so wrapped up in everything that's happening every second. He said he said, especially in the bubble, they would play the game and they would go back and he would watch the stuff on TV and he'd see what the media was saying. And like, he was just on kind of a roller coaster with how the team was doing, either getting too high or getting too low. And I think that is something that gave the Bucks problems the past couple of years. I do think they got in their heads. I do think that they let the pressure of things get to them a little bit. And obviously they were really close to getting past the Toronto Raptors. They're up 2-0 in overtime in game 3. Can't quite pull the game out. They end up losing that series. And, you know, last year, everything in the bubble was a mess for them last year. You know, Giannis gets hurt against Miami. They have the crazy ending in game 2 when he fouls, you know, touches Jimmy Butler's hip with no time left on the clock and gets a foul called on him. But I think this Bucks team is in a really good mental place going into the playoffs, in no small part because they replaced Eric Bledsoe with Jrue Holiday and they've added PJ Tucker, two veteran, tough-minded, you know, the perfect kind of guys you want to have if you're trying to go win a title. I mean, McMahon's been around PJ for years in Houston.
And those demons, those aren't their demons. So, no. You know, that does help. They were
it helps a lot.
They were definitely Eric Bledsoe's demons, but he's gone.
Well, and it was interesting. In the game, they had the two games against the Nets recently. And I know James Harden didn't play, but there was a moment in the first game they played. There was a 2 or 3 point game, 90 seconds to go. Giannis drives into the lane. He gets double teamed. What does he do? He kicks it out to the wing. Who does he kick it out to? Jrue Holiday. Holiday buries a three, doesn't touch the rim. Eric Bledsoe would have airballed that shot. And that is, to me, the biggest difference with this team. It's why I think Milwaukee can get out of the East, even with the schedule they have in front of them. And, yeah, I mean, it was funny to have him kind of say, I don't know if it's going to be different, Brian. But he seemed to be in a really good place today. And I think they've been in a really good place for a while. And I think they feel comfortable and confident going into these playoffs. And, you know, if they can get by Miami, I don't think there might not be a better series in these playoffs than Nets Bucks. I hope everybody's healthy because I think that could just be an absolutely incredible series if they can get through this one.
Think Miami's going to miss Jay Crowder in this one?
Yes, I think so too. Trevor Ariza has been okay for them, but he has not been Jay Crowder, who I think shot 9,000% from three, particularly against against Milwaukee in that series. He was a huge difference maker for them. All through the bubble run, but especially in that series.
Well, down the stretch of the season, the Heat played really, really good offense. And the crazy thing about the Heat, as good of a defensive team as they were and have been for several years, as important as Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler are defensively, last year they made the finals because of their potent offense, because of Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero.
Well, and in particular, Goran Dragic. And to me, he is the key to this series. He's got to be close to all-star level Goran Dragic again, which he was in the bubble, and he has not been this season.
Well, they played pretty good offense down the stretch of the season. And, you know, Jimmy Butler was hurt and out a lot this year, and he missed a lot of their big key games. He didn't get to play in so many of their right. matchups. So it's hard to
– He didn't play in that Milwaukee game the other day.
Yeah.
For example.
So if he stays healthy and is in there, that's an X factor. But Milwaukee's got a brutal stretch. All right, the series that I'm going to pay attention to – well, I'm pinching them all, but the one I'm watching, and just because I think there's a lot of stakes, is Portland-Denver. And, you know, this is a
– might be the most even series of the whole first round.
Yeah, it's just you know, I know that Denver finished, I think they finished after the Jamal Murray injury, I believe they went 13-5. And that was even better than it sounded because, you know,
your MVP vote, didn't it?
I did vote for Jokic for MVP.
Breaking news.
Again, my argument was not that Embiid necessarily should have been the MVP. It's that he shouldn't have been disqualified, as he apparently was by those voters.
Bontemps will officially remove the jackass label from me now.
You know,
welcome to the dark side.
I don't, you know, if Portland loses this series, I don't know what's going to happen to the Blazers.
Well, I think you've got a pretty good idea of one thing that would happen. I think that it would probably end the Terry Stotts era there. I don't necessarily know that solves anything. I don't necessarily know if it's the right thing, but I think there's too much smoke coming out of there for that. You know, it would be naive to think that a first round exit would be enough for Terry to keep his job.
It's a crossroads moment for the franchise for sure. If they lose that game, to your point, it's hard to see Terry being back, and who knows what happens beyond that. And if they win that series again, like if it's Suns Blazers, they played an epic game last week. Like that would be a really interesting series. Like, you know, all of a sudden, like things could look totally different for Portland if they win. So I mean, for both these teams, I think there's a lot on the line, and it's a really compelling series. Obviously, it really sucks not having Jamal Murray. It's just such a killer. I think Denver might have won the West, maybe won the title if Jamal was healthy. It's just brutal that he isn't there.
What guards do they have?
Well, that's the thing.
Is Barton going to be back? Is Dozier going to be back? Like, I mean,
well, and think about and talk about a series where you want to have healthy guards, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there might not be a single team you would rather not play if you have a decimated backcourt than Dame and CJ, both of whom have been, you know, have come up huge in the playoffs.
Austin Rivers got there on a freaking 10-day. I promise you this, he will earn every dime of his playoff bonus.
Yes, he will.
Guys, I'm going to give you some stats here. 54% shooting overall. 45% on three-pointers, which means he shot 63% on two-pointers. I'm going to look up his splits here for these.
Who this is?
This Michael Porter since the All-Star break?
This is Michael Porter for the season.
Yeah.
Let me look up his post-All-Star break number.
He shot 54-45 for the season?
That's right.
Wow. I mean, I knew he had big-time numbers. I hadn't looked at him lately. That's big-time.
His release is absolutely ridiculous for a 6'10" athletic dude. I mean,
it's a beautiful shot. I mean, it's easy to see why he was such a big time prospect coming up. I mean, it doesn't take much watching him play to figure out this guy is really special at scoring the basketball.
Well, look, I was screaming as loud as anybody. Like, I thought they should have packaged him and you know, like, for example, package him and try to trade for James Harden is something I was talking. Like, I thought they needed another bona fide superstar. You know, they were not interested in shopping him. And looks pretty smart right now. He might have a decent future. There's some stuff that comes along with him, but he will put the ball in the hole frequently and efficiently.
Post All-Star, 22 points a game, 7.5 rebounds a game, 54% overall shooting, 46% on three-pointers. And here's the number, because it's not just because he's improved defensively, although he has, but also because they got Aaron Gordon to take some pressure off of him. Here's the number, guys, that I'm going to point out about Michael Porter Jr. His plus-minus after the All-Star break, plus 11.4 average per game. That's big time. Obviously, it's not just him. There's a lot of other stuff going on. My point is that this is a series where Michael Porter could truly be the difference maker. Not that it's not Jokic, you're going to have huge games, but
yeah.
You know, he's, you know, he, his play in the playoffs last year was up and down. He had moments.
His minutes were up and down too, not coincidentally.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's been hard at times for Michael Malone to trust him. You know, he doesn't have a choice now.
Well, and he's earned the trust, and he's you know, most improved player finalist, deservedly so. And you know, he's proven since Murray went down that, look, he's not just a complimentary player. Like, he is a star caliber player, at least he has been. I mean, his efficiency's improved since he had to become that number two guy. And since Murray went down, 56, 49, 85 are his shooting splits. Averaging 23.5 points a game.
I mean, he's got an indefensible shot. And I know that he and Durant both get annoyed at the comparisons. And I understand that. That's fine. But it's more about a 6'10" guy who can shoot like that.
Well, and yeah, an athletic 6'10" guy who can shoot and put it on the floor. I wish I could remember who tweeted this. But somebody mentioned he's more of a taller Clay than he is KD. And I can see that, because he's so,
because he never dribbles, basically.
He's just so smooth catch and shoot, and not just smooth, gets it off so quickly. And it's just, his shot is absolutely beautiful. And his ability, you know, a lot like, we're talking about, just how perfect of a fit that Steph is, you know, playing off of Draymond's strengths as a passer and a screener. You know, Porter is seeing all the ways that he can get clean looks playing off of the best passing big man in the history of the game. And, you know, that's a tough combo to stop, no matter who's playing guard.
Well, I voted for him for second most improved. And, you know, Randall was so awesome year long from start to finish. But a lot of years, Michael Porter Jr. is winning that award. and I know that there, you know, there's sometimes you don't necessarily want to, you know, guys naturally improve in their second season. And technically, I guess this is his third season, but really it's his second year.
Right.
But, you know, even by that standard, his performance this year was awesome. So I'm going to watch that series because of the stakes, especially for Portland. This could be Michael Porter Jr.'s arrival as a.
Well, and remember, Michael Porter Jr., it's his, like you said, it's his second season playing. It's his third season, and he's up for a contract extension possibility this offseason. And, you know, certainly if he goes out and, you know, balls out and gets Denver into the second round or into the conference finals without Jamal or beyond, you know, that's certainly going to be some ammunition for him to go get a very large check.
Well, he's getting the max. You shoot 45% on threes as a 22-year-old. I think, you know, the concern with him is the back, but
Right, but it's real simple. His leverage is pay me or trade me. And, you know, they decided not to trade him. They'll pay him. They knew when they decided not to shop him around, they knew they were going to have to pay him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, to be clear, I'm not saying that, like, it's the difference between making $15 million or the max, but, like, it would go a long way towards removing any potential lingering doubts about, do we completely give him the full max in an extension right now if he scores 30 points a game in the first two or three rounds of the playoffs?
You're right. You know, you're right about that.
It's just a big it's a huge opportunity for him. It's just a big, you know, especially with Jamal Murray out,
and they need it.
The stage is that they really need it. It's not like last year when Mike Malone could get mad at him for not doing something right on defense and sitting him for 15 minutes, right? He's going to be out there for 38, 40 minutes a game. And it's a huge chance for him to show he's that kind of player on a huge stage. And like you guys have both said, they're going to need every bit of his production to make the kind of playoff run they want to.
All right, well, here we go, guys. Playoffs start this weekend. 2 months of let's go. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to Tony, our producer. Have a good weekend, and enjoy the start of the playoffs.
Adios, amigos.